and now Webb's in the lead. Heat in the main at his home race. Levi Kitchen.
Cooper's got to play
Cooper
it.
Webb.
Oh, he goes to the
Cooper
inside.
Got a good run through there.
Cooper Webb. Here in Anaheim, the king of Texas, the closest race of the year. Levi Kitchen dominates. One turn left. Cooper Webb takes the win in Seattle.
Yeah, welcome to another episode. It's SMX Insider. We are the Jasons, Wygant and Thomas. Seattle Supercross in the rear view. We're headed to St. Louis and a Triple Crown. Maybe the door is back open for this championship because Jet Lawrence had been taking over, but it flipped a little bit.
Yeah, I think the momentum may have slowed a bit. And you think about him winning three races in a row, it really felt like he was about to run away with his championship. And then, yes, he gave some points back. I think he could have and arguably should have won this race when you look at how fast he was able to go. But in the end, he did not get it done. And the points go from, you know, could have been 24 had he got the job done. Now it goes back down to 16.
Yeah, but I'm going to counter and say, I honestly felt like his speed advantage in Seattle might have been more than the races where he just won the previous weekends. It was about a second and a half. You could see it in certain sections, the sand jump, the rhythm lanes that only he was tripling through consistently. So I still chalk it up to it wasn't a W, but it was in some ways still a W.
Yeah, I think he rushed it here. And if you look at the data, he crashes on lap 8 of 24. And you could say he forced the issue there with Webb. And then when you look at the lap times, specifically laps 4, 6, and 7, he was going about 2 seconds a lap faster than the leaders were. So when you start to think about what that looks like, if he's just patient, takes his time, finds a place where there's really no risk to make a pass, you look back and you're like, man, you really didn't have to make that move there. And especially when he didn't really have the angle. You know, he makes contact with Webb's swing arm. There's really no way a pass or even a solid move is going to be made in that scenario. And I think it's something he'll learn from. And I think it just lends to the fact that he has more experience to gain, more situational awareness to pick up on. Having said all that, when he gets all of those things aligned and he is his best self, and I don't know if that's this year or 2 years from now, these guys are in for a world of trouble because of that speed edge that you mentioned a few minutes ago.
Yeah, maybe the rookie mistakes are still what at least Webb and Sexton in this championship can count on. And it's interesting how quickly that flipped, right? Because we literally brought the king of Supercross, Jeremy McGrath, to Seattle to talk about changing the guard, rookie titles, big win numbers, and all these things that we kind of already assumed are headed Jets' way. So we will talk to Jeremy McGrath about that on this show, and we're going to hit a lot of other topics from Hunter Lawrence getting a heat win despite an injury to Levi Kitchen's dominance in Seattle, and what does that mean going forward for the 250 West campaign, and a lot of other inside data, even a take on the future for Eli Tomac. But first, let's talk to the king of Supercross, me, JT, and Ricky Carmichael. What is it like when someone starts to take over? Well, Jeremy knows.
We got to bring you in because there's only two riders that have ever won this title as a rookie, you and Ryan Dungey. Jet Lawrence trying to take control of this championship as a rookie, and you can see it building for him. My first question for you is, going into your rookie season, did you feel like that was possible? How many races in did you start to feel like, wait, I might have an edge on the established riders?
Well, honestly, I didn't really know if I had a chance. I was saying this story earlier, and it's a good one. You know, when I've got my first full-time 250 contract, I had a top three bonus program, right? And this was 93 going into 93, but I'm going to be racing my heroes, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, guys I looked up to, Bradshaw, Stanton, and I went in and got the bonuses changed from first, one, two, three, and four. I added fourth because I didn't even know how many podiums I would get. I was like, I don't even know how many podiums
I'm going to
get. So then Orlando comes. I get fourth, I think, or fifth, one of the other fourth, I think maybe. And then Houston was the next week. I finished fifth. I really didn't ride that well. And then Anaheim came, and that's when I won finally. So honestly, even after Anaheim, I was like, I don't know.
Oh, really?
Maybe this, you know, this is a dream coming true, but I'm not sure. Is this really supposed to happen? And then came Seattle the next week, got my second win. So yeah, it was exciting times, but did I feel like I had a shot at the title the first year? No chance. No chance.
So we talk about Jet Lawrence. There's a lot of talk. You know, he's on the cusp of possibly winning it on his rookie season, and everyone's talking about your win record.
Right.
I don't know that it'll ever be touched. It's a long ways. You ever get tired of listening to people say, you probably got tired of people saying, I was going to contend for it, then Bubba going to contend for it. Like, what's your thoughts
on
the
dude?
Well,
my thought is this. Like, I think it's a little too soon to be talking about the big number. Look, he's got to get to you, the GOAT. He's got to get to Eli. And then he's got to get to my number two. It's a long ways away. I think maybe after 3-4 seasons, maybe 30-40 wins, maybe we start talking about it.
Yeah.
There's a lot to go.
Yeah.
And as you know more than anyone, you got to stay healthy.
Yeah.
Right? You missed the whole season.
Yep.
Because you hurt your knee.
Yep.
And, you know, that's part of it.
Years to
get
going.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of competition out here. We're going to see what's going to happen. But what we're watching, you know, he's possible. He can do it.
Yeah.
Okay. JT, what are you thinking down there as we talk to Jeremy McGrath?
Let's take the other side of that conversation, right? And you've got guys like Cooper Webb, guys like Chase Sexton that are clinging tight, trying to hang in there in this championship. They're sitting 20 points down. But we're only a couple races past halfway. There's a lot of racing left. So, MC and Ricky, yourself too, if you're sitting there, you're one of these guys, multi-time champions that are trying to get back in this fight. How do you approach this thing? How do you claw some points back down the stretch and make this thing a title fight at the end?
I mean, what you answer?
Well, here's what I think. You know, like, he's got a leg up right now because he's getting the confidence, right?
Yeah.
I always used to listen to you, man. Oh, it doesn't start until halfway through the year. Get to Daytona. Let's go.
Right.
And for me, I was like, let's get to Anaheim. I need to get a points lead. You know what I mean? So for these guys, I think, you know, every week that he wins, he's gaining confidence that they can't grab back, right? And it happens. The changing of the guard happens. When you were coming, it was like, okay, how long can I hold this guy off?
Yeah.
And they're saying the same thing right now.
Yeah,
how long can I hold this guy
off? But I didn't believe it. Like, I didn't believe it when I won a couple in a row.
Right.
I mean,
it takes a minute to
even know that I really realized it until maybe after the season because, like, he was my hero, you know? You know that.
Right.
So
it's a strange thing, right?
It's strange. And
I mean,
I didn't believe it going
to
the
guys.
Next season.
Right.
I'm like, dude, this guy's going to whip me in
0-2. Oh, man, yeah.
He won the top four bonuses. You weren't sure you could beat him after you won the title.
Yeah.
There's so much modesty up here from two of the greatest. Hey, thanks for coming by, King.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Sir. Okay, 30-second board. Hot topics in the sport. Well, the big one is ruts. I think the riders and the mechanics and the teams, maybe even the fans, JT, are tired of these muddy or muddy-ish races. I don't care. I think it's led to phenomenal action. You want separation and not everyone can do the same thing and strategy? We had it at Seattle. It was a perfect race to me. It came down to half second. What's not to love?
Yeah, I think it's really challenging for these riders. And on a track that's not very difficult, everybody's doing the same thing. I can almost guarantee you that Jet Lawrence is not going to be able to make up a second and a half or 2 seconds a lap, right? So to me, when you're talking about the highest form of off-road motorcycle racing in the world that we have, I'm okay with really difficult, challenging, demanding racetracks. You know, do we need it every single weekend? No. Thankfully, we're going to have a great racetrack upcoming. But I really think it adds to a championship at this level. And speaking of a championship at this level, Seattle was a home race for Levi Kitchen. That's really where the question is. Is this a turning point for Levi Kitchen? Is he now the guy? Or was this just, you know, similar conditions to what he grew up on, kind of riding the wave of momentum from all his friends and family there? I ask you, Weech, who is this Levi Kitchen? He's the guy they're going to run away with the championship? Or was this just a product of his environment?
I think this is a little bit larger of a gain. I think, let's say, out of the 100% massive gap that he had, I'd say maybe half of it came from special circumstances. I do believe Kitchen, because he's so still new, it's only his second really full Supercross season. He does have room to grow, and maybe he did over that 6 weeks. But I think you cannot count out the home crowd. That was amazing. And did you get a little bit of intel from the RJ Hampshire camp? Again, not an excuse that Hampshire didn't win, but another little advantage that Kitchen had?
Yeah, it was just one of those things where they're looking for every little percentage point of difference that they can. And RJ Hampshire found a little move that Pro Circuit made there. They just made a cut to a tire. And all that does is give more grip. And what you're doing is expanding the pattern a little bit. So that's going to grab a little bit more dirt every time that tire turns over, and it helps on the starts. It gives you better forward drive, because RJ was like, I can't get the start with him. I can't do the jumps as easily as he's doing. There's something going on. So he went back and looked at everything, pictures, video, and he had found that Monster Energy Pro Circuit Kawasaki had made a modification to the rear tire. And was it the difference between winning and losing? He would say arguably not. But it's those little things that, you know, sometimes winning is in the margins, and going down the stretch, RJ knows that they have to grab every little advantage that they can.
Yeah, so that's it. I don't think that we're in for 21-second victories. I think some of that was Seattle, maybe a little bit the tire. Was Kitchen the best guy? Yes. Could he still be the best guy in the West? Yes. But I don't think by this margin. And if you look at the 250 West points, hey, the second place is fine for RJ Hampshire. He's only 8 down. There's plenty of racing left, even some East-West showdowns. The biggest loser here, unfortunately, is Jordan Smith. I think everybody saw those crashes. He's going to need some luck to get back into this one. So, nah, I think there's plenty still to play for. And although maybe Kitchen has flipped it from the second best guy to RJ, and maybe he's now the best guy, I think it's still a small enough gap where we're into some great racing. So that's 250 West moving forward. Well, they got to be a little scared, I guess, with how good Kitchen was. Let's move to the 450 class from Seattle. It was a battle for the ages, although Cooper Webb has a way of doing this. He never wins races by huge margins. I just want to go to the moment there where Jets finally, he's not catching them. He's out of it. Too many mistakes, too many errors. And then it comes down to this, Sexton versus Webb. And JT, they both knew how important this win would be.
Yeah, when there's wins in the offering like there was this weekend, and they know where kind of Jet's trajectory is headed. They know how good he's gotten and how quickly that's happened. They know they have to win. You know, that 6-point swing between getting first and second is huge when you're getting late into the series here. And you could see it was indicative of their effort. They were both pushing the envelope everywhere on a very tricky racetrack. And this is, they're two veterans, you know, past champions duking it out. And will they end up winning the championship? Who knows? But when it's nights like this and it's down to the wire, these are the kind of races you look back and sometimes championships are decided. And in battles like this, you're trying to look who has the advantage, why, how, where are they finding time? To me, the sand was really the story. And if you look at the approach that Chase Sexton was making versus Jet Lawrence and Cooper Webb, it kind of changed throughout the night because the line, you see Cooper Webb jumping there, that was clearly the quicker line, but that went away. They were unable to continue doing that. And then Cooper Webb started dropping into this hole where Chase Sexton started doubling into the hole. And what I found so interesting is that Chase in the press conference mentioned that was his edge, jumping into that hole, but he didn't have the benefit of going back and watching the tape. He didn't know those guys were jumping the sand wall yet. So I think when he went back and watched the tape, he'd be like, oh, I was losing tons of time there. But then in the end, he almost made the pass for the lead by going his line. So it's a fluid dynamic, but it speaks to one line can be all the difference in winning and losing in this class.
It speaks to why this track was awesome. Yes, at one point, Webb was way better than Sexton in the sand. Then the line to jump on top of that wall went away. And then Sexton actually ended up being better than Webb in the second half. Webb said, I didn't have a plan B. Once the jump line went away, I didn't know what to do. I think that's awesome to have that kind of a chess match at speed. The two riders who have won a lot of races. So that was actually pretty cool to watch. And the rhythm sections kind of had their own version of that going. It was really compelling racing. We can look at the points here. I don't know. We could talk 16 points. We could talk Sexton got it back within one race on Jet. Jeff Emig, former champion of this series, used to say, I'll take momentum over points any day. I feel like they've got to find a way to beat this kid one way or another. The points, it doesn't matter if you're down 6 points, 16, or 66. If you can't beat them consistently, you're in trouble. That's my take when I look at these standings right here.
Yeah, they know they still have a problem. You know, for Cooper Webb, he can see Jet Lawrence coming. Chase Sexton could see Jet Lawrence catching both of them. So he reinforced the fact that he could go faster than them. This was not a surprise as he's closing, and closing down on them. So yes, I think they're very happy to, you know, Cooper Webb's happy to get the win, but they know the underlying problem is still there. You know, they still need to be faster because there's a lot of racing left and they have a big deficit to make up on a guy that is consistently going much quicker than them week in and week out. And moving into St. Louis, they're going to have to do it over the course of 3 races, right? And you could look at Triple Crowns have been difficult for Jet in the past, but how can you say that anymore after he swept all 3 races in Indianapolis? So, yes, I think, you know, there's a chance that maybe things go wrong, but I really think that Jet kind of put the nail in the coffin in Indy on all of that conversation.
He did. I think the only thing they can count on now is, look, they're going to have to hope for chaos. They're going to have to hope beating him straight up speed-wise, probably not going to happen. So you got to hope for chaos. And what do the riders always say? They don't even like triple crowns because three starts is more risks than a typical heat race main event night with only two starts. And you have everyone against each other every time, which isn't the case of a heat. So I think at this point, you're like, maybe there's a first turn crash, spokes go into a foot peg, anything chaotic. Maybe that's what the triple crown breeds. Sometimes that's how titles are won and lost, fair or unfair as well. One other rider I want to mention, I was mentioning heat races. So Hunter Lawrence, it's really funny. He had two wins on the weekend going into the main event in Seattle. There was a pretty funny thing where they got on these Honda Moto Compacto. They're suitcase-sized motorized bikes. He beat the Seattle Seahawks mascot. Then he wins his heat race. It looked like he was beaming on the podium when he won this heat race. But then JT, I saw him after the main when he got seventh. No more beaming. Not pumped on the heat. Unless I think he's on the podium, Hunter Lawrence is not going to be happy. That's where he expects to be. Yeah, he's happy after the heat, but that didn't last.
Yeah, I think he knows he's in a process of learning and finding his place amongst the 450 elite. You know, great. He won a heat race. He beat the likes of Eli Tomac. You know, Ken Roczen had issues. It was a great race for him. I think a great step. But remember, he's racing through an injury. He's not 100%. I would bet he can't train and practice during the week the way he would like to. So it is a rookie season, and all of the issues that typically plague rookies are plaguing Hunter. Inconsistency, bad starts, crashes, injuries. So I do think it was a milestone. Getting that first heat win had to feel good. But then, yeah, a little bit of reality set back in during the main event. But the key thing is that he's healthy, didn't have a setback, and he can go into to St. Louis building from that heat race momentum and just a little bit more confidence. And speaking of confidence, we saw a rider come back to Seattle we have not seen since Hangtown of 2023 in Michael Mosman. He joined the Monster Yamaha Star Racing team. This guy's a character. To see him go out and qualify quickest, you know, okay, yes, track was in his favor. It wasn't rutted yet, but I don't care. He was in the mix all day, all night. We haven't seen him in a very long time. So welcome back to racing, Michael Mosman.
Sixth place. And when you look at how stacked that 250 Westfield is, he was in a dogfight, a battle the whole time. He didn't drop anchor. Didn't look like he got super duper tired like often would happen, or even arm pump, especially on a track like that. We all know Michael Mosman can go fast. That's never been the problem. I didn't expect that kind of staying power in his very first race. And now you got to start thinking podium, win before the year is out, because he's in for the rest of these Supercross races and Pro Motocross. Could really be a diamond in the rough that Star Racing has found, bringing Mosman back. And then the character part, yeah, he's something else. I'll just put it that way, fans. It also affects the manufacturer standings. I want to define what this is. We show it at the end of every television show. This is the best 250 and 450 result of each manufacturer at each race combined. And what's funny about that is, so Cooper Webb wins the 450 class, Levi Kitchen wins the 250 class, and that's what results in some of these scores that you're seeing here. This has been around, honestly, I don't even know how long. It's been around a long time, but I don't know the exact year because no one has really paid close attention to the manufacturer points. I think we should, and we could, and it'd add a nice little element to the sport, kind of like you root for your favorite team. Maybe you're a Kawasaki guy or a Honda guy or a Yamaha guy, and that's what you're into. And another championship to talk about is the SMX playoffs. We talk about this every week, JT, now that we have the venues announced. Hey, maybe Michael Mosman gets hot by the time we get to September. You never know who's going to rally for three weekends for the pride, the money, the prize. We're going to be racing September 7th, Z-Max Dragway in Charlotte. And then we're going to go to Texas Motor Speedway, but we've never had a race there the weekend after. And then back to Las Vegas on September 21st. JT, just think of it this way. Hayden Deegan, Joe Shimoda battling for the 250 title last year. Shimoda was hurt at this time last year, and Deegan was like four races into his pro career. So it really shows you September is so far off. Who knows what surprises we're in store for?
Yeah, it's so far from now, right? The trends that will develop from here, we don't really know who's going to catch fire late. Some riders are going to get injured. You know, look at Cooper Webb change teams in the middle of all of this. So there's a lot to unfold. So I think the biggest thing now is you just try to rack up points, put yourself in the best position possible. Obviously, you're hoping to qualify and get into those main events. But yeah, once you get in and you're locked in and you have some momentum, everything is in front of you.
I want to bring up one extra point here that's dangling in front of the pro motocross and the playoffs is the future for Eli Tomac. Now, last year around this time, he said, I will be racing pro motocross. Then he got hurt and didn't get to do it. With each subpar, I think is the term I would use, ride for Eli, the vultures start circulating. Is he going to retire? He's a proud champion. He's not winning races. I think you and I are starting to hear the opposite. I don't know about motocross or SMX this year, but we're starting to hear, I think, he might not be thinking about retirement as soon as some people think he might be.
Yeah, I think he's coming back. I don't have hard evidence to back that up. I look at the situation, you know, and if you go back to the offseason, I was talking about this. He's coming in late. I don't think he's going to be fully prepared. He's going to be on the back foot when we roll into Anaheim, and it's really hard to get out from behind the eight ball when you start there. I think he's going to want another full shot at it, come into the offseason healthy, be fully prepared. And if he loses again in 2025, so be it. But it will be at full strength and it will be his best effort. So that's kind of how I see it. I'm prepared to be wrong. I think the sport will be better for it. And I really think in his heart of hearts, he believes he can still be that guy again if he's given the opportunity to fully prepare. So let's hope that the future holds Eli Tomac in it. Speaking of futures, they're going to be back in St. Louis this weekend. We have seen fantastic racing, arguably some of the best of the weekend. You think about that battle between Gavin Towers and Cole Davies at Anaheim 2. They went at it all the way down to the wire, and the interviews from them were spectacular. Back that up with another battle involving Cole Davies. This time it was Drew Adams, those two going at it at Daytona. And man, I'm going to petition to have these guys at every single race because they are bringing it. The future looks very bright with these guys at the helm, and they are learning valuable skills here. And Weed, you think about that interview that we had at Indianapolis, the big interview on this show with David Luongo and Dave Frater and Tim Cotter talking about SMX Next, and what this looks like. It's unfolding right in front of us. You see these future superstars building the talent, developing the skills that are going to pay off over the next few years.
Yes, and I think what was billed as, hey, we don't know how entertaining this will be to watch. It's just a way for them to get experience. The fact that the racing has been this compelling is just a bonus for fans. I think it was, for the fans' perspective, it was a chance to get to know the next stars early, but now they're putting on arguably the most exciting races of the night. So whether they're 14 years old or 24 years old or 34 years old, who cares? Just the entertainment factor alone, and we will have them racing as part of the Triple Crown weaved into the format this weekend in St. Louis. And St. Louis has a special place in Supercross lore. Okay, the stadium doesn't even hold an NFL team anymore. Maybe it's not the most regal stadium that we go to, but the riders don't care, JT, and you know why. They love St. Louis because they love that dirt.
Yeah, St. Louis boasts arguably the best dirt of the series. The reason for that is they love the traction that it offers, similar to Indianapolis, but it doesn't have that deterioration, especially when we get, you know, if this was a February round, you'd see a softer version of St. Louis. But when you get into March, sometimes April, it's a little bit firmer, but it retains that traction level that all these guys are looking for. They can be really aggressive. They can use a more aggressive tire here. And that, you know, that bleeds through. You'll see guys with smiles on their faces on track walk because it just is one of the favorite rounds based on the dirt. Now, that could all change depending on the track map. You know, I got a chance to study it just this very morning, and I think it's going to offer some opportunities. The rhythm sections, everything, you know, plays out the way you'd want it to on a football-based stadium. You know, the St. Louis Rams used to play here. But this is the preferred version of a track for the riders. They love the long rhythms. They love the 180-degree turns that are on offering that gives them more opportunities to pass. So you're still going to have that short whoop section that kind of spans the width of the stadium there on the left of the screen. But overall, I think these are tracks that the riders really look forward to.
Also, one other thing, St. Louis has indoor pits, kind of like we saw in Seattle. I don't know what goes on there. These people are rabid. It might be the most packed, jammed, fired up group of fans that you'll see in the pits at any Supercross all year. Plus, we don't race here every year anymore, so you know there's some pent up demand. So between the dirt, the Triple Crown format, and those indoor pits where the fans are going to be trying to get all their autographs, it should be a pretty electric weekend on Saturday. Time for SMX Facts. We bring in our statistician, Clinton Fowler. We had a really close, exciting race, and I know you want to talk close finish data, but actually first you were diving into a, should I say, qualitative analysis of the start.
Yeah, it was an incredible finish. We'll get there. But the start was what surprised me. We're used to Cooper Webb having those endings, hounding people, and he gets a victory. But if you watch him off of the start, he gets pinched off by Adam Cincirullo. He's buried in the back of the pack entering that first turn. But almost in standard Cooper Webb style in a different way, he's able to come out of that first turn in sixth place. JT, I mean, he got a little bit of luck maybe there, but still, that really set up this win for him.
Yeah, he was opportunistic for sure. And the rule of thumb is if you don't get a great jump, you have to try to stick to the inside in a long 180, right? Because you cut off so much racetrack and it's such a shorter distance staying to the inside. One of the catalysts there, Justin Barcia got into the side of Jet Lawrence and bumped him, stood both of them up and opened a window for Cooper Webb to shoot up the inside there. So yes, did he catch a break? But also you could point to Cooper and say, When the window opened, he was ready to run right through it.
What really drives this point home, Clinton, what rider was actually side-by-side with Webb going into turn one?
Yeah, I mean, that's the part that really, for me, was the stark contrast. Eli Tomac was right there next to him, but he was one guy to the outside. And when you look at him coming out of that first turn, Cooper Webb's in sixth, Eli Tomac's in 16th, just a massively different finish to what their nights were, all because of that start week.
Webb put 10 riders between he and Eli in, what, 10 feet maybe?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, at the white line, it was one double. He had a whole double ahead, and that's 10 riders. That's what happens at the beginning of the race.
That's unreal. Wow. Okay, so now we can get into the finish and the data you have on, Cooper Webb. Anytime we have a list of close finishes, he seems to be involved.
He's in the top 10 on multiple occasions, guys. In this case, in the 450s, ninth closest race ever. It's a half a second, an incredibly tight race. JT, he obviously, as he said on the podium, he was riding with arm pump. That's a difficult race and a difficult track to survive with arm pump and still come away with that close of a victory.
Yeah, and Ricky Carmichael did a great job of pointing that out. And what he was seeing was, I like to say it as, the motorcycle was riding Cooper Webb instead of Cooper Webb riding the motorcycle. He's just kind of off the back foot. He's not really aggressive. And it's kind of a body language. It's subtle, but it was there. And Ricky did a great job of letting people know that he might be dealing with some arm pump. And to your point, Clinton, on the close finishes, keep in mind, the last two corners, the only thing really separating those two was that Cooper Webb was on the inside. If Chase Sexton was on the inside of either of those two corners, he probably wins. So I don't know how you can get much closer in theory than those two were. Really, it was just kind of track positioning and who had the inside, not really who was in front of the other.
But what's interesting is on the same night we had this super close finish, we also had this massive gap in the 250s. We talked about Levi Kitchen earlier in our show, Clinton, but what do you have on the data for this big margin for Levi?
Yeah, I mean, incredible victory by Levi Kitchen. The last time we've seen somebody win by 20 plus seconds was 38 rounds ago, over 2 years ago. It was at Anaheim 3 in 2022. Christian Craig beat Vince Freeze by 25 seconds. So incredible victory back then, but it's not something that happens a lot. Just like we don't necessarily see those super tight finishes, the big victories, I mean, Levi Kitchen winning by an average of 1.2 seconds a lap faster than the next best person, just unheard of. JT, like, I'm sure you guys have talked a little bit about this, but you got to assume he's the title favorite now with a victory like that.
Yeah, I'm going to try to not read too much into it because it was such an outlier event. You know, I don't think in St. Louis he'll be 1.2 seconds quicker. We have to think about how much, to Weege's point opening the show, that separation that this track allowed for, that is not a common thing. That's not something we're gonna see week in and week out. Doesn't mean Kitchen can't be your champion, but I think to do it, he's gonna have to win by being a little bit quicker, having better starts, being the more consistent guy. I just don't think you're gonna see these big wins like that moving forward.
All right, the real number that will matter is if he can turn this momentum into another win, another number one, the Triple Crown in St. Louis. We'll see. Thanks for the information, Clinton. See you there.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, we're going to wrap this show up and head to St. Louis. Again, Triple Crown format. That means that the Last Chance qualifiers will take place as part of Race Day Live, our qualifying show. And that starts at 1:30 Eastern, of course, on Peacock and the SMX Video Pass outside the United States. And they're the same host for the racing that begins at 7 Eastern from St. Louis. JT, do you remember your St. Louis racing days there and that dirt we already talked about? But, I mean, was it a race that you circled on the calendar as one to look forward to?
Not really circled. You just, because it's such a week-to-week thing and you're trying to focus on what's coming next. But it always is one that you know, when it is next, you're excited about it. You know that you're in for a great race, controlled environment, and it's a known quantity. Not to worry about the weather. You know you're going to get a great racetrack.
Okay, yeah, that's what we're in for this weekend. We know we're going to get a great racetrack. The riders and mechanics been dealing with these muddy-ish conditions. They finally get a weekend off from that. All right, everybody, hope you enjoyed SMX Insider. Enjoy the show from St. Louis.